The Hoop Collective is presented by QuickBooks. New business? No problem. Success starts with Intuit QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We have a Los Angeles-based show today, which everybody always loves. Smile. Joining us from the Valley is Ramona Shelburne. Hi, Ramona.
I like that. I've just become this 818. I like it.
You are from the Valley in every sense of the word.
Like, you know.
And from the West Side, not from the West Side, but he's coming to us from the West Side. But Om Young Masuk, you're a West Sider now.
Yeah, that's crazy to say because I'm really, at heart, an East Coast guy. So, you know, it's tough hearing that West Side, but I'll take it.
Look
just
at all those shoes.
Just don't throw off the W. Just don't do your...
All those shoes. This pod isn't visual yet, but Ramona, look at all those shoes Olm's got behind.
It's amazing. It's really impressive, actually.
This is just like like I said, I'm the male Imelda Marcos. I have probably 2,000 shoes, so I need to display them all against all four walls of this room.
Yes. Well, my son would be actually much more impressed with your Bubba Fett helmet that you have behind you.
Yes. Although I was very disappointed with the show, but
we won't talk about that. We talk about the NBA. We'll talk about that offline. I really would like to not talk about the Lakers so much, but Ramona, I can't stop.
I know.
Because they just draw the eye so much. And
they are.
Saturday night, LeBron plays one of the best games he's played since the 2020 championship, scores 56, third highest scoring game of his career. He scored 56 in maybe his third or fourth season with the Cavs. And then he didn't get back there again for 7 or 8 years. Like, for a long time, 56 was his career high for seriously years on end. So for him to put up his third high, we're talking about a guy who's going to be the all-time leading scorer. For him to put up that kind of performance, that's a classic LeBron game all told, to do with what's going on right now. And it just, in a weird way, sort of fits in with this Lakers season because the whole thing is just so all over the place that, yes, of course they can lose to the Pelicans by 25 or whatever it was in the same week at home, that they can beat the Warriors and LeBron put up 56. By the way, LeBron's played how many games against the Warriors in the last 8 years? 70? I don't know. Dozens and dozens of games. Some of the greatest games ever played against the Warriors. Some of the greatest games of his career have been against the Warriors in the last 6 or 7 years. And yet, even with all of that framed, he has this incredible performance. And opens up the door to let the Lakers somehow believe again. Tonight they play San Antonio in San Antonio. When this pod comes out, we won't have known what happened. And I have no idea, Ramona. I'm almost afraid to wonder what happened in that game. You exist in the world of the Lakers. have you ever seen a year like this that we're experiencing?
No, never like this. No. I mean, the only thing that comes, there's two years that have come into my head as reference points. One of them is the year where Kobe tore his Achilles at the end of the year, where it was 2013, I believe that is.
It was a Steve Nash, Dwight
Steve
Howard.
Steve Nash, Dwight Howard. This is going to be fun year. I'm sorry, Lee Jenkins. We have to point out the SI cover that ushered in this beginning of the year. And there was something about that year that was equally frustrating, that nothing was quite working. There was one player on the team who was constantly injured. That would have been Steve Nash. There was one of the stars who was just not fitting in and couldn't fit in. And there was always a frustration level with him. That was Dwight Howard. And so you really just had Kobe and Powell, which is pretty damn good. Okay, Kobe and Powell. But Kobe just was willing them to victories, putting up all-time performances night after night, to the point where you said, God, if they could all just get healthy, at the end, and if Dwight would just do things that Dwight needs to do, I remember, behind, everything Dwight, they wanted him to do was we don't need you to score. We have three all-time scorers out there that, like, you don't even need to be, you can be 15, 20 points a game and that's fine. Just play defense and rebound and be a Hall of Fame at that, the Hall of Famer at that. And, you know, just like, I remember Kobe said to me one time, just look at how Bill Russell played. That could be Dwight. That's Dwight. That's who you need to watch. Okay. And I was like, you're right. It's a really good point. I mean, and
Dwight, just play like Bill Russell. Damn it. Just play like Bill Russell.
But I mean, that's what Bill, I mean, he was incredible defense and rebound. I mean, that's what Dwight is great at. And that's when they won a championship. That's what Dwight did. It's interesting. This is the year that reminds me of, because remember one of my all-time favorite quotes, Brian, Gary Beatty, who was the longtime trainer of the Lakers, said to me at the end of that year, so that, you know, the end of the year ends with a whimper. It's very sad. It's like Kobe tears the Achilles against the Warriors. They go to San Antonio and get swept in the first round. You know, they try to muscle something, but there really is nothing there. And Gary Beatty says to me at the end of the year, he goes, you know, when you're banging against when you're banging your head against a wall for a long time, it feels good when you finally stop. And I was like, that was an all-time quote.
You could bring that quote back to this season, I'm afraid to say, because that's what this season feels like. You know, so I thought it was interesting. Magic, before the game, comes on to the pregame show, the countdown. They did it. It was on the floor. They did it from the floor. And the reason this is interesting on several levels. One, he's Magic, and people care a lot about what Magic thinks. But a couple of weeks ago, I guess it was maybe a month ago, Jeannie Buss was quoted in The Athletic. They were doing their all-time countdown, you know, all-time players, and they got to the Magic story, and Jeannie was quoted talking about Magic, that she still consults him. She said, and this is like, this is Jeannie saying on the record that she called Magic, you know, in December of this year and asked him about what she should do with what his advice was to do with this roster. And I'm fairly certain that his advice was, you know, stay the course. And by the way, the Lakers stayed the course. So not only is Jeannie consulting him still, she's apparently listening to him. I mean, I'm not saying that he was the only one who felt that way, but this is her saying this on the record a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And here's Magic, who's still just having discussions about the Lakers with the owner, now coming on television and saying, Ramona, that if the Lakers don't make the playoffs, and I mean, I would even argue if they eke in, it doesn't really change it. Whether you finish ninth and then you eke in versus whether you finish sixth, it doesn't really make a difference.
Yep.
They said this will be the worst trade in Lakers history if they don't make the playoffs. I think, you know, I mean, Stephen A. just kind of looked at him like, whoa. But you start to think about
Steve Nash trade wasn't very good either.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just, you know, put that one up there in terms of recent history. But then after the game, he says how proud he is of Russ. And I think it's also the other thing Magic said, which I think he was right on the money about, which is where he criticized Westbrook. And he said, listen, it's time for you to show some accountability. Stop battling with the press and start playing better. And it was interesting to hear Magic talk like that. And then after the game, praising LeBron, praising Russ. And it's hard to reconcile him being so critical at the beginning of a game, and then after one game, praising him. But unless you actually know Magic, which is Magic comes from the Pat Riley school of like, I'm going to say it to your face. I am a hard ass. I'm going to say what needs to be said. And when you do bad, you're going to hear about it. And when you do good, you're going to hear it too. And it's like, there's no kissing somebody's butt just to make them feel good. There's no trying to smooth things out. No, he is just direct. What you see is what you get. What he feels is what you hear. I mean, that is, it's very, you know, you, I'm pretty sure he writes his own tweets, right? Because you can tell the voice. I think there's I think the other part of the quote was, Hey, Russ, you're the one who called LeBron and AD and said that this can work. And Kobe believed in you and said, you were the guy. You need to prove it now. And it was like, wow, that is a direct quote. And
I mean, that was a lot he said there. Cause Ohm, he says one, he doesn't blame it. He doesn't blame the trade on LeBron. Like a lot of people have, he blames it. He says, Russ, you asked for this. And then So when you call to Kobe, it is like that is like waving a red flag in front of anybody, because when you invoke Kobe's name, especially when you're talking about like a current Laker who Kobe was a peer of, he put it all on Russ, all of it Russ there. He didn't put it on LeBron. He didn't put it on anybody else. I mean, that created a visceral reaction. What he said,
only somebody like Magic can invoke Kobe's name. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't like that. You cannot speak about Kobe unless you are in the pantheon of Laker greats, unless you are on that Mount Rushmore. And Magic certainly is. And I mean, honestly, in Laker history, and there's a lot of people on that Mount Rushmore, but there's really Kobe and Magic. And Kareem should be up there too, but in terms of presence and persona, it's Kobe and Magic. So for him to say that, I mean, there you can't say a word. You cannot argue, which is, and it also made me think, Brian, about other criticisms Magic has had of Russ. And if you saw his documentary, one of the things that Magic said about Russell early in his career, remember during the finals when the Oklahoma City plays Miami, and after one of those games, Magic goes on countdown. And he says that was one of the worst performances by a point guard that I've ever seen. He said he was out of control. He needs to lead his team better. And it was like, this was a major focal point of Russell's documentary. And this is, done in consultation with Russ. So obviously, that's true. And that's something he felt very deeply, of just him answering Magic's criticism of not being a true point guard, of not being somebody who can set up people with assists and set up, and organize an offense and just being out of control. And like that became something he had to prove that he was not. And that's why a lot of, he put such an emphasis on getting assists and those numbers and proving himself as a point guard in that offensive role. And I like, so, Magic's words have weight with him, and it's now the second time Magic has had a very strong commentary on this Lakers team. The first time LeBron didn't even speak to the media afterwards. Remember? And I think Russ did, but he said we don't listen to that. But yeah, now he did it, and it's not like anybody heard him pregame. They were on the court and then they went and played. But right. I'm sure those words got back to them afterwards.
Yeah. This season isn't just about Russ. The failures that the Lakers have had are across the board, but Russ has never responded well. You talked about him when he was at, early in his career. Like, he has never responded well to being attacked like this. And in fact, somebody who knows
maybe
him,
he has, though. Brian, maybe he has.
Somebody who knows
him. He gets defiant, but he played really good after that.
I get, somebody who knows him really well, before the season. I was in the preseason. I ran into him. I've mentioned this before on the pod, and he told me that he will not play the role of Bosh and Love. He will not sit there and take the blame. He will not handle that well. And this guy called it square on the nose. And that's what's happened. But I will say this, what's going on right now, like LeBron is, the way what's happening right now is that the Lakers are not going to win the championship this year. And so LeBron is he's sort of walling off what's happening, and he's just saying, I'm going to just score points. And if nothing else happens, I'm going to pass Karl Malone. He's about maybe 8 to 10 games, depending. I mean, if he keeps scoring 50, it'll be shorter. He'll pass Karl Malone, barring injury. He'll pass Karl Malone maybe by the end of the month, if not early April. And then he'll set up the chase for Kareem next year. And like, now this becomes a historic chase for LeBron. If he can't go for the championship, he'll go for the scoring. He won't be overt about it. He won't, make it seem like it, but when you watch the way he plays, he's going for points. So, I don't know if the Lakers fan, like, I feel like if he was with a different team that he'd been with for a long time, people would find it more honorable that he's just getting for points, But it's now pretty much what the Lakers have left is to watch LeBron just try to score a lot. Three times a week, The Right Time with Bomani Jones podcast brings you the latest from technology, music, and the very best analysis of the games. Plus, they've got a community of friends, including Dominic Foxworth for Foxworth Fridays. That's The Right Time with Bomani Jones, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. And Monday and Wednesday are also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, to me, look, we talk about Russ, and it certainly feels like all of Laker Nation, whether it's Magic, whether it's the fans, people have already found their culprit when the season goes down in flames, and that's Russ. Like earlier in the season when LeBron was scoring a lot of points and he was in that stretch where it seemed like he was getting 30 a night, I remember thinking to myself, you know, I look at LeBron's assist numbers and I was thinking, it looks like LeBron has just decided, you know, okay, I'm going to score. I'm going to let Russ get his triple doubles. You know, I'm going to let Russ do the playmaking. And then nobody can point the finger at me that this went down in flames, that this didn't work. I did everything I can. I'm even just playing the role of scorer. And then, of course, that all season that went along. And now it feels like he has to score and have these big moments like the other night, a historic game almost, for the Lakers just to win. Look, they got 10 of their next 13 on the road. What happened on Saturday night? Obviously, LeBron sees the Warriors. He sees Steph. He has this classic game, but that's not going to happen every night. Like tonight, they're on the road in San Antonio. It would surprise no one if they lost that game in San Antonio. They've got, look, we talk about the Russ trade. Is this going to be probably one of the worst trades in Laker history? They face Kyle Kuzma and the other guys. They shipped out twice in the next like 8 games. You know Kuz is going to be hyped for that game. You know KCP is. You know those guys are going to play and try to prove the Lakers wrong. And wouldn't it be great? You know, wouldn't it be something else to see them and then another former Laker, Brandon Ingram, keep the Lakers from making the ninth or 10th? Like, you know, Portland's done. I think Portland's, you know, they're sinking straight down. They're resting guys now. Things like that. New Orleans, I think, could catch the Lakers. It's going to be fascinating to watch those two teams. But, you know, just watching this now, it looks like you're right. LeBron, I don't know. I mean, you know, LeBron obviously sees that they can't win a championship this year. So maybe his championship right now would be to catch Kareem. Obviously, it's going to happen next season.
You know, he's also on the edge of the scoring title, which he's jousting with Embiid. And chances are, you know, Embiid's scoring is going to go down a little bit because he's playing with Harden. And now Maxey's scoring a lot of points. By the way, LeBron did win a scoring title way back in 2008.
And he reminded everyone in the shop that he gets what I think he said. He's pissed off that people don't talk about him as a scorer.
So this is LeBron doing his little LeBron maneuvering. So
yeah,
for years, LeBron used to say, I'm not a scorer, or I'm a basketball player. I make the right play. He would be irritated if you just talked about his scoring. And that's why he took so much pride 2 years ago when he led the league in assists, which, by the way, Ulm, to your point, he's averaging 6.2 assists this year. It's the fewest since his second year in Miami. He averaged 6.2 and 4 less than when he won the assist title 2 years ago. By the way, there's only been 4 guys who've ever won an assist title and a scoring title in their career. Jerry West, Wilt Chamberlain, Russell Westbrook, Harden and LeBron. So I think there's been five. Here we go with my trivia again. I'll probably get proved wrong. I'm probably miss somebody there, but it is interesting that he could potentially go 10 or 14 years in between scoring titles. But he is right there. He's averaging 29.4 points. That's the third highest of his career, actually fourth highest of his career, and right about where he won the scoring title in 2008. And so, like, I do think that, you know, he's now transitioning, saying, hey, by the way, I'm a great scorer, because it's something that he can achieve. He can achieve this year a scoring mark. He can pass Malone and then next year get the all-time scoring mark, a record that a lot of people question would ever fall. I can remember when I would start to do the math, like about 5 or 6 years ago, can LeBron get there? And it was like, well, he's got to average like 25 points a game when he's like 38, 37, 38. And people were like, I don't know if he can average that many. Yeah, he's not. He's averaging 25, 20 or 27, 28, 29. So I think he can pivot to this, you know, and it doesn't do the Lakers any good other than it gives the fans, I guess, something to engage in. But Ramon, I can feel him pivoting to that. And it even, you know, it even kind of fits in, like the Lakers really need him to score right now so we can do both.
Well, I would like to say a word for LeBron. There's a sort of the way, if we just present him as a guy who is just doing, he's just going like in a mercenary type quality of like, I'm just going to go get my scoring record. And that's what you're going to pay whatever money you're paying for your season seats at crypto for the next year or two to see. I guess you can pay in Bitcoin. Maybe that's worth more or less on those seats. I don't know. Depending on the value of that. But I think I got to give him credit, man. Like from where we were 2-3 weeks ago, throwing a very public tantrum about, you know, just being upset. They didn't, you know, make trades. They didn't do anything. They didn't sort of bend to his frustrations. You know, flirting with everyone in Cleveland when they went back there. You know, it did not play well here in Los Angeles. I'll tell you that. I was on radio and the callers who would call in, the people around town, there was a gratefulness to it. There was a, well, if you don't want to be here, fine, get out. You know, you're not a real Laker. I mean, there was a very negative reaction to his behavior 2-3 weeks ago. And, you know, I kept saying on the air, I was like, look, people get to be frustrated. People get to be upset and they get to vent, especially when they're showing up and they're working their way back through these injuries that he's had the last few years, that he's, you know, still playing at this level. He's bringing his side of the, he's upholding his end of the bargain, right? In terms of playing. You get to be upset. You get to be frustrated. That's fine. It doesn't mean you have to leave or that you want to turn your back on people. I mean, I probably would keep it out of the public eye. I would probably just vent to my friends and not through Twitter, or in my hometown of Cleveland, but it's allowed. That's fine. And for him to go from where he was 2-3 weeks ago to just absolutely bawling out on Saturday night against the Warriors, in a game where both teams really needed to win one. Both teams have really been scuffling, and we call them the Warriors, but they certainly don't look like the Warriors right now. They look like the Warriors from last year or the year before that right now. Where it's just whatever Steph can do and everybody else is just there. I think that's pretty impressive. I mean, to put all that behind you, to basically get told that you're wrong, to basically get told, hey, if you don't want to be here, see ya. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That's what's going to be. I know, but that's what's going to be left for the Laker fans is to watch LeBron just score a lot of points.
Yeah, but he's playing. He I'm not saying they're team building at this point. There's no team building.
Well, like you said, like 2013, Kobe. He just was like, look, this team's not any good, but I am going to do my best. I'm going to score a lot of points. And he became legendary for that. It was so strange that he played himself into an Achilles tear and became legendary. It's one of the fascinating things about Kobe is that people regarded what was probably a really bad decision, playing all of those minutes into an Achilles tear as a badge of honor. And they're really, really wrecking the back, you know, section of his career.
Yeah, it really did.
But don't you think that's what's going to happen? With, like, if LeBron keeps posting these, like, 46-point, 47-point, you know, 43-point, and, like, let's say they eke out a few wins or whatever, and they bow out in the second round of the play-in or they whatever, it can be remembered as and LeBron will get his scoring marks and everything like that. Like, that's what you're going for now. That's what I'm saying. He's pivoted to that. That's now,
well, I mean,
the past.
Except, look, I think, Brian, you still have that hope that, like, if AD comes back and Russ plays the right way, you still have that. It's still there.
You know, it's funny, Ramona. I was talking to someone who's very familiar with the Lakers about a week ago, mm-hmm. when the Lakers were stuck in this, you know, 4-game losing streak and looked awful. And this person told me the Lakers need to pivot their mentality from thinking about what they should be and what they thought they could be to, we are a play-in team and we have to make that. And this person said, that's what the Lakers need to do. They are too focused on what they should have been. And they now need to focus on the reality of what they are.
And I think that's what LeBron's doing. LeBron's making the best of the situation.
Yeah. And the other night, to me, like, look, LeBron, you are right, Ramona. LeBron's in the midst of a great season for him scoring wise at this stage of his career. And certainly I think it feels, you know, when you look at LeBron now, you don't want to waste his years, but the Lakers are, right? The Lakers are wasting these performances, and they actually need them to win just to make the play-in game. The other night, when the Clippers put an ass whipping on them, and there was no other way to describe it, the Clippers went into that game at halftime down 3. And the Clippers knew they were going to rout the Lakers. Okay. I actually talked to a few people that actually said they just knew. I think they knew how the Lakers were playing. They knew that if they played the right way, they were going to win big. And so they start turning around. Reggie Jackson has this unbelievable game. At one point, not only did he figuratively dance his way through the Laker defense, he literally danced his way through the Laker defense.
Yeah.
At one point, the arena's playing in-game music. And he's bringing the ball up court. He just crosses half court. And his body is gyrating to that in-game music as he's surveying the defense, okay? That's how hot Reggie Jackson had it. And he was talking trash at one point to LeBron. And I looked at LeBron, and LeBron, I could see it. I was just like, LeBron was so frustrated. LeBron, it was almost like LeBron's like, I can't believe this is happening, because I think he wanted to see basically the Lakers take a stand. You know what I mean? Against the Clippers, against their in-hall rivals.
Yeah.
And they were getting whipped like it was nobody's business. And so now I think, you know, you look at this, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, the Lakers are wasting these great games by LeBron James. And he can't keep putting up what happened Saturday night against Golden State, even though that's actually what they need. I mean, you can point to figure out all the injuries, Anthony Davis, all that stuff. LeBron basically is doing everything he can. But I think he also realizes what's in front of him, that the things to chase right now, because he's not going to get that championship he needs. So in order to add to the legacy, he's doing what he's doing best right now, which is catching Carl Malone and catching Kareem.
LeBron's legacy, his case is ultimately going to be the longevity of greatness more than the championships. Because if you start counting championships, you're going to come up short. If you start, you know, looking at, you know, the record in the finals, you're going to get poked at. But he's going to be able to say, look, I did this for 20 some years and nobody scored more points. And look how many assists I had. And look how I took 3 different teams to titles. Yeah. And look how I made 10 or whatever finals. Like, that's ultimately going to be his case.
And people will add all of that and say, that's what makes him, you know, the greatest of all time.
And so that's what he's doing right now. He is just playing the role that is there. So, but I do want to talk about the Clippers. The Clippers had a terrible loss on Sunday, right after we decided to talk about them today at home.
Knicks. I know.
The Knicks needed that win so bad. Seven losses in a row. The Clippers, I feel like, you know, they've just sort of been out in the waiting room all year long. Like, oh, the Clippers are in the waiting room. They're waiting for Paul. They're waiting for Kawhi.
Yeah.
They have a terrible offense. They're 26th in the league in scoring. And let me tell you who else is down there. 30th, Oklahoma City Thunder, bad team. 29th, Magic, awful team. 28th, Pistons, horrible. 27th, Rockets, just had a 12-game losing streak that they just broke. They upset Memphis on Sunday night. 25th, Knicks, one of the big disappointments of the season. They just had a 7-game losing streak. 26th, in that pack, Clippers. And yet here they are in really incredible position, despite the injuries, despite everything. They're the number seven defensive team. And as we sit here to start the week, they're in eighth place. They're, you know, they're a solid play-in team. I don't think they'll be able to get up to the top six, but making the play-in for them is a huge accomplishment. And so, before I even talk about Kawhi and Paul George, how are they doing it?
First, I think you have to credit Ty Lue. Ty Lue has done an unbelievable job this season. To me, he's up there with the other coaches as far as the best performance this season by a coach. What he's done with no Kawhi Leonard, no Paul George since December 22nd, Norman Powell out. They acquire him in a trade. He's only been around for like three games before he fractures a bone in his foot. So he's done an incredible job. I think he's, you know, kind of shown people coming out of like maybe LeBron's shadow a little bit, because I think not a lot of people gave Ty Lue a lot of credit. Yes, he won a championship, and a lot of people were thinking, oh, well, that's a LeBron championship. But Ty Lue is one of the best coaches in the league. I mean, they didn't even have their defensive assistant, Dan Craig. He was out for a little bit with an injury, and credit, you know, Brendan O'Connor, one of their assistants out there, that really kind of took over the defense, and their defense really took off for a stretch. Reggie Jackson, you know, he's not even playing his veterans every night. You know, like last night, his veterans struggle, and a lot of times he's going with the young guys like Terrence Mann, Luke Kennard, these type of guys. I mean, these, you know, this season, this is amazing, right? Like 2 years ago in the bubble, the Clippers wilted at the first sign of adversity when they blew that 3-1 lead to the Denver Nuggets, and they had this reputation of you know, being the Clippers. The Clippers were going to clip. Now this team this season is a team that, well, last night they got blown out. But prior to that, it was like this team, they fall behind by 24, 25, 35 at the Wizards. They come back and they win. So they've had this sort of resilience to them. They have this thing where they're always going to be in games. Last night they cut a 29-point lead to actually, I think, 12 entering the fourth quarter, but then ran out of gas. And you're right, the Knicks absolutely needed that win. But the Clippers have played incredible ball. I mean, up until last night, they had won five straight games. And their schedule was absolutely brutal.
Weren't like three of them against the Lakers?
Yes. I was about to say, their schedule prior to the All-Star break was one of the most brutal ever. I think they had played something like 63 games or 65 games, and it was like tied for the most ever with two other teams played prior to the All-Star break. So their schedule down the stretch now has actually been very beneficial for them, and they took advantage.
They played Houston and the Lakers. They had five-game winning streak, and they had three of the wins against the Lakers. They kept playing the Lakers.
And the others were against the Rockets.
Yeah.
Okay. They kept playing the Lakers. I'm like, how many times did the Lakers and the Clippers play?
Yeah. And look, I think they had a letdown last night because they got so up for the Lakers. They swept the Lakers in the season series, blew them out, and then, of course, had a couple days off and then ended up playing the Knicks, and the Knicks were incredibly desperate. But Ty Lue has been incredible. He's pushed all the right buttons. And you're right. Looks, I think for now, right now, the Clippers, the hope is, and we kind of saw a good sign the other day. I think it was Saturday morning before practice. Paul George was out there. We haven't seen Paul George many times on the court this season when the media is allowed into practice or shoot around. And the times we have, we saw Paul George shooting left-handed from about 8 feet out. This morning on Saturday morning, Paul George was shooting right-handed. So that was a huge sign, because now you're starting to get a little more hope. They just kept giving Paul George, every time there was an update, it was like, oh, he needs more time. We're going to give him more time to rest. It was like they were kind of like stalling for more time. Now Paul George looks like he's starting to shoot right-handed. So maybe in a couple weeks, we get another update, and maybe Paul George is progressing to perhaps getting close to practicing. Norm Powell's out there in a boot on his foot. He's shooting. They're talking about, you know, maybe they can get him by the end of the season. And then the Kawhi Leonard factor is that Kawhi has been out there working his tail off by all indications, but we are not even close to a year from when he tore his ACL against the Utah Jazz in game four.
I mean, all the information on Kawhi is shut down. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I have any insight. There's like, oh, he's ahead of schedule. Yeah. Ramona, I can't see him playing this year. Can you? Cutting the price of your wireless bill feels good. Really good. Actually, it feels great. You should try it. So cut your bill by switching to Straight Talk Wireless, now offering our $45 Silver Unlimited plan. That's unlimited high-speed data and 5 gigabytes of hotspot for just $45 a month. Get nationwide 5G on America's largest, most dependable networks. So why pay a whole lot for your data when you can get unlimited for a whole lot less? The $45 Silver Unlimited plan from Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. With the safe return of live events, you can actually be there to catch all the action in person with Vivid Seats. That's right. Every alley-oop slam, every one-timer, every sideline grab can be experienced live. And with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards like free tickets. All you have to do is collect stamps, redeem, and repeat. It's that easy. From upper level to courtside, Vivid Seats has you covered for all the events that matter to you. So grab your tickets today and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Visit VividSeats.com to download the app today. Vivid Seats. Life happens live.
Yes and no, right? I mean, you're right. It's all shut down because a month or two ago, I started hearing more optimism that he would come back. But then that seems to have turned around. And who knows why, right? Is it the team doing that? Is it him? Is it his camp, Uncle Dennis, whatever? It's like, it's the truth is, the guy's coming off an ACL. And it was suffered late because last year's playoffs were late.
Yeah.
So we're not even a full year from that ACL injury. And this is the same leg. Oh, correct me if I'm wrong, that he had the right quad injury. I don't know. I wouldn't do it. it's the same leg. I mean, you know, the injury was suffered in May, or was it May or June? It was late.
June 14th.
I mean, think about that. We're not even a year from when he suffered an ACL injury. On a guy that, you know, you care about his future more than you care about the present. And so I wouldn't do it if I was, it'll be up to him. It'll be up to them at the end. But I was more up to, you know, initially I was hearing, Marge, he'll come back. But now it doesn't seem like he's anywhere close to that, does it?
I mean, here's the thing that I remember talking to some people in the organization. I'm like, what's the deal with Kawhi? And they were just like, look, I mean, as they pointed out, he's not even a year back. It'll be in June. Okay. Number two, we have to remember, this is a power player. This is not a guy who's like, you know, a shooter in the corner who's going to catch and shoot threes. This guy, every way he plays comes with power. So that's something that they got to consider. But here's the same thing on the other side that the Clippers don't, they're not in Kawhi Leonard's head. Okay. Nobody is, right? Only Kawhi Leonard is in his camp. So if the Clippers are like, I don't know, 8, 7, or maybe even the 6th seed, okay. Paul George comes back. Norman Powell is back. They're playing well. Or let's say even they're the 8th seed and they play a number 1 seed, Phoenix. Chris Paul's not ready to return. Kawhi Leonard's feeling good. Nobody knows if Kawhi Leonard's going to say, you know what? I want to play. You know what I mean? And if he's cleared medically and he's feeling good and he looks good, I mean, that's the whole thing. Nobody knows what's going to happen at that point, how Kawhi Leonard's going to be feeling, where the Clippers are, how they're going to be playing. And you know, short of the doctor saying you're not ready, if Kawhi Leonard can actually play, who's going to stop him?
Let me say something about Reggie Jackson. I used to not be a fan of his game. You know, I was a low efficiency, sort of like high dribble player. You know, I didn't like what he did in Detroit. I just didn't like the player he became. And he ended up getting bought out. Like, you know, you get bought out when you're in your 20s. It's usually not a good sign, you know. Mm-hmm. And, he could get was a minimum contract from the Clippers. And I got to say, like, he's done like a mid-career renaissance. He is just a better player in so many facets. And he's like a leader on the court. He's like a leader on the court. And, you know, the Clippers for that stretch, they had Lou Williams, and, you know, Lou would carry to them to so many victories. Like when they were in their like interregnum between, you know, when they dumped Blake and Chris Paul and they were rebuilding. And then, you know, when there was injuries, like Lou was always sort of there to fill in the gaps to sort of keep them afloat. And the fans loved him for it. He always showed up. He always played. That's kind of what the way they're different players, but it's kind of the way Reggie's playing now. And like, I kind of got to take my hat off to him. He has done more and meant more to them than I ever could have seen. And I give credit to the Clippers for believing in him and then giving him a contract. Like when they gave him that contract, I know it wasn't for that much money, but they gave him quite a bit of money last offseason. I was like, man, yeah. I don't know if any, I was like, that's a lot of money for him. And like, he's outplaying his contract right now. Oh my, I have to give Reggie Jackson credit.
Well, Reggie Jackson is in the perfect situation for him, which is, I think, first of all, coming to Los Angeles and being close to Paul George meant a great deal to him because they are BFFs. And, you know, look, Reggie Jackson out of the bubble, you know, and with his first season with the Clippers, he kind of felt like he was a little bit an outsider. He wasn't part of that group yet because he came in late in that season from the buyout. And he was not in a good place in the bubble. Everybody talks about Paul George and the depression, but Reggie Jackson was not in a good place in that bubble, much like most of the Clippers that season. And Reggie then thought about actually kind of quitting. I think his brother convinced him out of it and said, oh, well, what would you do if you weren't playing this game that you love? And then he eventually found that love. And now Reggie Jackson is in this place where, I mean, it's like heaven to him. The fans chant his name. He loves playing in front of the home crowd, the Clipper crowd. I mean, how many people have you heard that, right?
Yeah. Actually, so now, now he's got a new promotion that when the fans chant his name, he's going to have the ball boys or not. That's an old term. He's going to have like the dance team or whatever. Yeah. Throw
peanut butter and jelly bites. They're little packets of bites.
Yeah. He loves peanut butter and jelly.
Yes.
So if you chant Reggie or MVP or whatever you're going to chant when he's at the foul line, you can.
There's no MVP chance. They chant Reggie.
Okay. They chant Reggie. They throw the bites to you in the crowd. That's
yeah. And look, he is the fan favorite right now for the Clippers. Reggie Jackson, not a lot of people know this because I think around the country, because, you know, I mean, Reggie's not like a Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, but Reggie Jackson, I mean, he goes and talks to literally as many people as he can in the building. It doesn't matter if you are a janitor or if you're a Clipper front office person or if you're a random fan. Reggie Jackson will stop and have a conversation with you in the building. He's just like a man of the people. When he comes into his media sessions, you can only ask him like maybe 5 or 6 questions, but he'll talk for 20 minutes. Like each answer will be like 5 to 9 minutes long because he just doesn't want to stop talking. And then when he's done talking on the podium, he'll walk outside and talk to reporters for another 15 minutes. It's just like he's in this place right now. Such a good place.
Anti-Kawhi.
For yes. I mean, you know, you can't get Reggie to actually stop talking. Sometimes he'll ask reporters. It's like, you didn't have a question for me today? Like he's just in a great place and a great mood. And he also obviously has the green light right now. I mean, last night he took a lot of shots. He had a bad game. He followed it up for a great game against the Lakers. But I mean, he's just in this place now where he's so happy. We kind of saw the first glimpse of it last year in the playoffs, where at the end of the season, when he came into the meeting room, we asked him what it meant for him to be here. And he broke down, started crying. That emotion has not stopped for him. That's exactly how he feels. And he wears,
you know,
the
difference, Ramona, expectations. The Lakers had expectations of winning the whole thing with this great team. The Clippers had no expectations. Look at the way the Lakers play on Tuesday. Yeah. Then the Clippers come in and play on Wednesday. Yeah. And it's like two totally different situations. You look at the other night in that game, like Reggie was like clowning Westbrook out there, like, you know, crossing him over and everything.
Yeah.
Think about the way Westbrook season has gone and the way Reggie Jackson season has gone. It's like defining those two guys.
A couple years ago when the Clippers get Kawhi Leonard, they get Paul George, and it's this battle for LA. And there was more attention on the Clippers than I've ever seen in their entire existence as a franchise. And they were seen as the heavy. Like, they were seen as the team now. They were the favorites amongst a lot of media, at least, and amongst a lot of people around the NBA.
I'm raising my hand. I thought they would win. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't handle that well. They are, at heart, an underdog franchise. That is their identity. That is how they play great. They're really good at surpassing expectations. Well, last year, what was their run? When Kawhi got hurt. I mean, after Kawhi got hurt, they almost beat the Suns. I mean, like, Paul George, I mean, God bless him. Like, how many minutes did he play in that series?
To be fair to Kawhi, he was playing incredible that game he got hurt. And they were going to beat Utah. And I still think they would have been, obviously, they would have beaten Utah with Kawhi Leonard. And then with Kawhi Leonard, they might have, they had a chance to beat Phoenix.
They had a chance. They had a real chance to beat Phoenix. Maybe yeah. more for the Valley Oop or you know whatever all the yes. other yes. plays in that series. But like they are great in that underdog role, and I think they are an ultimate underdog this year. Not only like people not believing in them, but people just there's absolutely no pressure on them this year. There's absolutely no expectations, as you were saying, Brian. And I think Reggie Jackson to me is a classic underdog hero, right? This is the role that he thrives in. I was going back and rereading the feature I did on him last year during the playoffs. And I remember he was, you know, it was he and his brother were, his brother's like really close to him. They talk all, you know, he's always around. He's always, you know, in this corner. And it was just amazing how this journey that they've been on went, where they were just, you know, Reggie's just been in a lot of different stops. He was an Army brat, you know, he's a military family and they moved around. He's never really had a home base. And he, you know, there was the scene last year in Miami and Travis, his brother told me about this. It was, you know, Reggie messed up at the end of a game. It kind of blew the game. They were going to lose to the Heat. And he is the type of guy that really holds everything. Like he knows that you don't have to tell him. He's a really smart, cerebral guy. And he knows exactly what happened. And he knew he blew it. And he was just beating himself up. He looked like he was going to cry in the court. And the entire team ran over to him. I was like, hey, man, it's all right. We got it. You're going to be all right. It's okay. It wasn't just you, you know? And Travis said, he goes, that was like the moment he's been waiting for his whole career, where people just accepted mm-hmm. him unconditionally and where they were there for him. And I think that this team has something, and it feels to me that it's been left over from last year, right? They started building that camaraderie and that culture. You know, we talk about that word is overused in the NBA, but there are a few franchises that have it, you know, Heat culture, right? You know, like it's like a game of play. It's a drinking game whenever we say Heat culture, right? but I think the Clippers are doing it. I think Ty Lue's yeah. got something there where it's a culture there now. And especially amongst those guys who went on the run last year. And it's, you know, if they get one or three of their guys back, watch out.
Yeah, no, I you're right. I think they built this culture. Like last season, they had all these comebacks where Ty Lue was benching his vets and bringing in younger guys. And now there's this culture mm-hmm. there where the vets, they'll see that the younger guys got it going. And then they're about to check in. They'll tell Ty Lue, you let these guys, you know, keep running, keep going with them, yeah. things like that. And so to your point though, Wendy, there's no pressure on them this season. There will be no pressure on them in the playoffs. Next season, all the pressure will be back on them, because the way they are built right now, they are built to win it all next season with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and Norman Powell healthy and ready to go. Mm-hmm. And all these pieces around them, to me, they have to be the favorite in the Western Conference next season.
All right. We'll see what happens between now and then. Before we go, I just wanted to, Lakers are playing at the Spurs tonight, as we mentioned several times. We are, mm-hmm. we've been waiting now for Greg Popovich yeah. to tie Don Nelson. The Spurs begin a 7-game homestand on Monday. We're hoping that it happens now. So he's got 1,334 wins. Nelson, who coached 5 years more, this is Pop's 26th season. Nelly coached 31. Needs one to tie Nelson for the all-time record, and then then one more to pass him. He passed Lenny Wilkins just before the All-Star break. Lenny Wilkins was third. And if you look at the top 10, by the way, Doc Rivers is 10th. Doc Rivers had his 1,000th victory earlier this season. He's now in the top 10. Only Phil Jackson has a higher winning percentage in the top 10 than Pop. So obviously, not only for a long time, but at a high level for a long time. The Spurs are in a rebuild. They're down right now and not going to make the playoffs this year. In fact, they've lost 4 in a row. So, it would be, you know, it will be a moment. You know, Pop will probably downplay it. He hates talking about himself. Yep. If you attempt to ask Pop about himself, he will instantaneously change the subject, mock you, walk away. It's a very difficult situation. In fact, pulling back the curtain a little bit, we've been preparing for this at ESPN, And we knew that there was no way we could do a Greg Popovich sort of retrospective talking to Greg Popovich. So we just had to go talk to other people about their memories and favorite things about Pop. But he should get his moment, even if he doesn't want it here in the next few days, Ramona.
Yeah. You know, it's back in the 2014 finals, got sent out to write one of those wrap up stories on whatever team wins. So it's like, it's like an old classic Sports Illustrated wrap up story, right? Like, how did they win? And
you stay up till dawn. I stay up all night.
And I spent one night in the, I guess it was the AT&T Center back then. And there was just like one vending machine. Me and Lee Jenkins at the time, he was at SI. We were both writing our dueling Spurs stories. And it was like, what are we going to do here? I was like, do you got anything, Lee? Like, it's, he's like, well, I got something from Boris Dia. And I was like, it's really hard, right? And Lee, at least he'd written about the Spurs several times, right? This is my first crack at it. So I was still fresh on turn to, put Pop things into context. And I went back and reread that story the other day because I liked it because I don't think Pop really even talked about himself, but I did the thing where you talk to everybody. And, I always think about this. When they won their last title, it was after they had that heartbreaking loss to the Heat. Remember the Ray Allen shot, you know, and we've talked a lot about how they came back from that. Okay. That was a heartbreaking shot that they lose the finals. They were just seconds away from winning a title. And then it's not only do they lose that game, they lose the series, and it's victory snatched from the jaws. I mean, defeat snatched from the jaws of victory. Right. And Pop, you know, he has this dinner where they all get together and they sort of have this big family dinner and you talk about the game, you talk about everything, but you really just bond and you have this family type atmosphere. And
that was a devastating, probably the lowest moment of all those guys' careers, losing.
And it's something that a team doesn't always bounce back from. And not only did the Spurs bounce back, but they won the next year. And it was interesting talking to some of the coaches and players on that team, because Pop, you know, let everybody go off for the summer, you know, and they all were low and down. And the first thing they did, they had a coach's retreat. And remember, this is the year that Mike Budenholzer and Brett Brown left. So it was in between. So not only do they lose the finals, but he loses his two best friends on the staff, two longtime assistant coaches. They go get their opportunities and he's really happy for them, but also he's kind of lonely. You miss your guys. And he brings in the new staff and they have their coaches retreat up in Napa. And the first thing they do is make everybody watch that game again.
I know.
They wanted to start this year where they had left off. And they wanted everybody to understand the pain that everybody who was coming back felt, but also to say, okay, this is the last time we're going to talk about that. We're going to move forward. And it was, I remember talking to Jim Boylan, who was new on the staff that year. He said it was really pretty remarkable how, everybody felt it. Like we were all in it together. And, I just think there's something about Pop where he you can never forget that he's a military guy. Like everybody in his platoon, everybody in his group, they really feel that connection. And like, even, I'm sure you didn't have too hard of a time getting people to talk, right, about him.
Well, actually that year I went to the Spurs training camp. Uh-huh. Or media day, and I was tasked with the story, right, about how the Spurs are reacting from the worst defeat in the history. And I was like, oh my god, this is going to be awful because no one's going to want to talk about it. And I go to the first, I go to media day, and they all talked about it. Pop was like, yes, we're going to talk about it right now. And I was like, I can't believe it. And then he took them to Colorado Springs to the Air Force Academy. Yep, that's where they had their thing that year. By the way, you mentioned Budenholzer leaving.
Yeah.
During that playoff run with the Heat, while the Spurs were going into this terrible 7-game loss, Mike Budenholzer was interviewing for the Atlanta Hawks job, and he was so terrible. His first interview, he bombed the interview. Danny Ferry was a GM. He had been in San Antonio. Uh-huh. He wanted to hire Mike Budenholzer as his coach. He brings him in to meet the owner, and with Bruce Levinson, who was the owner at the time, and Pop or Bud makes a mess of the interview, and Levinson says to Ferry, I can't hire this guy. He messed up this interview. How can I trust him to drop a play at the end of the game? And so Ferry was like, oh my God, I really want to hire this guy. So Popovich, in the middle of the finals, like while he's preparing for like game 6 or game 7, calls up the owner of the Hawks and says, hey, would you please give Bud a second interview? Give him a second chance. And
wow,
on Pop's word, he gives Bud the second interview. Bud performs better. He hires him, ends up having a great tenure in Atlanta. But that's just, you know, part of part of those stories that you hear from Popovich.
And Brian, I'll simplify it like this. Okay. The man may come across as gruff or cold or whatever adjective you want to use. But if you're in the circle, if you're in the family, there is a warmth there and an empathy that I don't know if you can appreciate unless you're in it or close to it or know people who are in it. And, I always talk about this, some of the best coaches or managers or anything in any walk of life are people who encourage you to feel your feelings. Okay. Feel your feelings. That sounds like a simple thing, right? Like I am sad. I am mad. I am upset. I am angry, but so few people actually feel those things or allow themselves to feel those things. And the thing I learned about Pop and his style is, he's not afraid of that. He is not afraid of feeling your feelings or letting his guys feel their feelings. If anything, I think that's why they're so close. That's why he gets that level of bonding and connection and loyalty from his players and anybody who's been around.
I mean, Ramona, look, there's so many, you talk about the inner circle Pop, and it's almost like they're so loyal to him. It's like Fight Club, but it's the Pop Club. It's like, you know, you don't tell people what's going on. You know what I mean? Like basically when we talk to people about the story that Wendy was talking about, I can't tell you, like Steve Kerr, Bud, so many people start off by saying the best Pop story is the one that we can't tell. And so, you know, they're loyal to him, that they know how much he wants to keep things behind closed doors. But at the same time, you start to hear a million stories about the human side of Pop. There's so many stories of how Pop has gone out of his way to help anybody from, you know, an assistant like Monty Williams when he's grieving to right down to an intern who came in for one summer, basically, and has not been with the Spurs since. And he has gone out of his way to help as many people as possible. So that's the one thing about his greatness, I think, is a lot of the players will talk about that too, is that as demanding as he is, and he's very demanding, he also has this very human side to him where he's constantly kind of just concerned about you and life. And it's always like, you know, they're always going to break bread. They're always going to drink wine, whether it's a big win or it's the most, you know, the biggest traumatic loss, like Ray Allen hitting that three.
Well, the Monty Williams connection is deep. And I talked to Monty about it, and I don't want to give away the story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if the Monty story will make the,
it will
because, you know, the thing about it is that Monty lost his wife and then Pop lost his wife, and they have that connection and they were just there for each other. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's different. I will say this before we go, I would not say that I enjoyed covering Pop two summers with Team USA. I would not say that it was enjoy. I covered him in China and Japan, more access in China than in Japan.
Wait, Wendy, you weren't part of the legendary Pop dinners?
No, I was never invited. Although I actually one time wound up at a Pop dinner table. It was after Pop has a rule about five people. Dinner should be five people, which I wholeheartedly endorse. And I stick to this rule. Like when we go to like big events, like the finals, there's a bunch of people wanting to go to dinner and I go, no, Popovich rule of five. If you have more than five, enjoy your meal. I'll go somewhere else. But I did end up at his dinner one time, at his dinner table after I didn't actually eat the meal with him. We were at the same restaurant, and I ended up at the table. And so I did experience a little bit of it. And then that night, he was getting an Uber. He didn't even have his car. and he goes outside and he's waiting for an Uber to come get him. And there's a valet there, and it's sort of a higher end Italian restaurant we were at. And I'm waiting for my car that I was driving to be brought from the valet, and he was waiting for his Uber. And Pop goes over to the valet driver, and he says to him, "Hey," he asks him he goes, "I'm going to start asking you questions." And he asks him like the five most basic basketball questions you could ever imagine, like this most lamest basketball questions. And every time the guy got one right, Pop pulled 20 out of his pocket and stuck it in the kid's pocket. So he gave him 100. He basically made him answer 5 questions.
Awesome.
We happen to be in Cleveland, and he goes, "Who's the best player in the NBA?" And the kid goes, "LeBron James." He goes, "You're right. $20. So he goes, "What's the name of that lake right there? Lake Erie. Here, you're right. $20. So, and then at the end, the kid, the valet, you know, he's probably like 20, not really a kid, says, "Hey, would you mind taking a photo? Could I have a photo with you?" And he goes, "Yeah, but that'll be $20. So there's a lot of those types of moments with Pop. That said, I can appreciate that with the media, he can sometimes be difficult. I did not enjoy necessarily the way he operated with the media with Team USA.
Yep.
Having said that, I can tell you that him winning that gold medal in Tokyo was extremely meaningful to him. And considering the challenges that they had, you know, for example, bringing 3 players over, they never had a practice, and like, let's immediately play the same day.
Yep.
You know, and them dealing with teams that it had been building up for years to try to beat the US and navigating through that. And he did do a couple of things in coaching that were just really risky that he ended up paying. It was more than just roll the ball out there. He worked his butt off. That was meaningful for him to get that gold medal. And while the back end of his career with the Spurs has not been that successful because Duncan retired and Kawhi left, he did, you know, put something impressive in that file, getting that gold medal, even though I don't think history will remember it because the Americans are expected to win. But
heck, when do you even see the guys that were on that team? Draymond Green loves Pop, you know, just from that experience there. So it's like those guys all love Pop as well.
Yeah. Well, like I said, they had a different experience than I did, but I appreciated what it meant to him and how hard he had to work with his staff to do that. Okay. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Ramona and Olm. Ramona's got to get going. Good luck with your commitments today. And Olm, I hope you have good luck with your other big life event that I won't mention that's happening this week. Okay.
Thank you.
Take care. We'll talk to you guys later this week.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.